Welcome to revisionmedia.org. This is Thursday, the 24th of October, 2019, and welcome to the show wherever you are around the world. What is that? That's 5 p.m. Eastern time, and I think that's, 2 p.m. Pacific time, if I'm correct. 10 p.m. here in the UK where I am, and welcome. And, of course, if you've been watching anything to do with UK politics and life generally, it has been dominated again by Brexit. And I think there's a mixture of absolute fury and just exasperation and boredom at the shenanigans and the whole in Parliament and the whole debacle. We had finally had a vote that was voted through on Boris Johnson's deal, which is a kind of a reheated Theresa May's deal. It's like it's not really Brexit the way that people wanted Brexit, and for those who have been trying to everything they can to stop Brexit, it's a bit too much like Brexit. So they've now basically Johnson has paused it as such because he wanted to leave on the 31st, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen. And I'm not going to talk about Brexit too much today because I am thoroughly sick of it myself. As I say, there's a mixture of exasperation and just boredom. To boil it down in its most simple terms, I mean, the deal is on the table, but it looks like we're heading for another delay. Because while that deal was passed, Parliament voted against his timetable for it, which was 3 days. And Parliament want more time, as if 3.5 years wasn't enough, to look at the details of the withdrawal bill. And it'll be another delay, folks. Despite everything that Johnson said, the Benn bill, which essentially took a no deal off the table that was legislated for and voted through in Parliament. And then last Saturday, the Oliver Letwin bill legislated and was passed through Parliament that he must ask for an extension if there's no deal agreed upon and scrutinised and ratified and everything else. So we have the deal passed as such by Parliament, but it's not passed in terms of the timetable that the government wanted it to go through, which is before the 31st. So we're pretty much heading for a delay again. I would be amazed if anything else happens now, and whether there's a whole song and dance now, but whether there's going to be a general election, and it just goes on and on. It's just the can's just been kicked down the road more. I mean, we'll probably still be talking about Brexit in about 4 years' time. Because, of course, they never wanted us to leave, and they've done everything they can to stop us leaving. So there is talk about a short delay, but we'll see what happens. I was hoping to get E. Michael Jones on the show tonight, and that hasn't happened. He's a lot busier now than he used to be. I will get him on. He did get back to me. We have to arrange a date. But I'm going to play an interview that I did play. I think it's worth listening to. I played it on my previous show with Red Ice Radio. Where he's talking about Greta Thunberg. It's a very good interview and some great insights there from E. Michael Jones. So I'm just going to play that. I'll play it for half an hour anyway, and then I'll see where we're at, and I'll break down some other stuff. I mean, Brexit is a bit like an addiction, but I'll try and cover some other things. But I'll play a bit of this interview by E. Michael Jones, because, as I say, I was hoping to get him on. So, but it's not direct, but it's good. It's always good to hear Mike, and we will get Mike. And if you're new to Revision Media, it'll be an opportunity for you to listen to E. Michael Jones, and I will get him on the show as soon as he is available. But here he is with Red Ice Radio. Notice that Red Ice don't mention the word Jew anymore either. I was saying on my previous show that people, and I understand it, but you know, everybody seems to be referring to anything to do with Jews now just as globalists or, you know, the tribe or whatever else, because the censorship is so aggressive when you talk about Jews. I mean, I had half a dozen videos deleted from my YouTube channel. So I do appreciate it. If you've built up a channel and, you know, you're trying to reach people that, you know, to mention the word Jew, but it just shows you just how powerful they are and just how absent they are from any kind of public discourse. And they've affected social media so much that those of us who have been talking about them have started to, you know, essentially censor themselves so they can continue doing some work. Anyway, that's a side issue. This interview is about the whole climate change thing with Greta Thunberg.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thanks so much for joining us here today. It's great to be back with you, Henrik, Red Ice TV. And today we have E. Michael Jones back on the show. I've been an admirer of his work for a long time. He's done a lot of good work in exposing the globalists, the people that are trying to subvert us, especially his angle on history and looking at social engineering and things like this, just magnificent work. And today we're actually going to spend some time talking about a little girl from my neck of the woods, Greta Thunberg, which, of course, I don't know if you guys remember, I did a video on this. Now, of course, we're post-YouTube deletion here, so that video is currently not on YouTube. It's gone. It actually garnered about 480,000 views, I believe, before finally the channel was yanked. Some actually even speculated that it was because of that video that our channel was deleted. We haven't actually gotten any answers from YouTube, so we're uncertain. We don't know what specific video or what portion of which video it was that got our channel deleted. But some speculated that. It was a little bit too much truth that was getting out to a little bit too many people, so I'm not sure. But Greta Thunberg is a fascinating area to discuss. So E. Michael Jones, welcome back. Great to have you here again.
Thank you. Thank you. We are now undergoing the coldest summer in recent history here in South Bend, Indiana. It's the wind is howling out of the northwest right now. I can't go rowing today, but what can I say? It must be global warming, I guess.
Well, they changed their tune, didn't they? First it was global warming. Now it's just climate change.
It's a safer bet. It's a safer bet. When the temperature drops to 20 below zero in South Bend, it's safer to call it climate change.
Exactly. The reason why the ice caps the ice sheet is growing in Antarctica is because of climate change, right? So
yeah. So you did a great job on that video exposing the whole connection with the Swedish energy sector and pointing out the fact that this is not something that a 16-year-old girl does all by herself. Oddly enough.
Yeah, with, of course, some mental challenges as well at that. What was it? Mild autism, or she's on the autism spectrum. I think that's the correct term. And she has an obsessive compulsive disorder. And again, in the video, we exposed that she obsesses about certain things. So when she was told originally about the fact that we're all going to virtually die, that the Earth is going to go under here in 11 years, she became so obsessed with it. I still feel, despite the fact that she, of course, is levying a lot of criticism around that we have an establishment and an elite behind her, which is taking advantage of this poor girl. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that if you read her mother's memoir, that becomes pretty clear. I'm really grateful that her mother wrote that memoir, because I think it really explains something. In spite of herself, let's put it, I have to say that in spite of what she's trying to say. The gist of what she's saying in the memoir is that climate change it manifests itself in various ways throughout the world. So in the Sahel zone, it's drought, but in Sweden, it makes you crazy.
It seems like it's,
is
well,
this true?
Certainly some people.
Is this true? So she has in the middle of her book, first of all, this is Melania Ehrman's memoir. Melania was famous. She was well known as an opera singer. And then at a certain point, she became really famous. She won the Eurovision Song Contest in 2006 in Moscow.
There she is.
And she just shot off into the stratosphere of international fame at this point. And this is, I think, where the pretty much the story begins, because at this point we have the family drama. This book is about family drama, but it's also about family drama in the context of Swedish social engineering. And so you have to kind of plot this along generational lines here. Now, we talked previously about the era of, let's say, Maria's parents era, which would be the Ingmar Bergman, Harry Schein, Olaf Palme era, mm-hmm. where they basically decide that we're going to have heaven on earth here. It's called socialism. It's basically Christianity without Christ. And we're going to build a million apartment dwellings or houses, and everybody's going to be 80% on the in the country and 20% in the city is going to be reversed. Now it's going to be 80% living in apartments and the countryside is going to be emptied out and everybody's going to be happy because it's heaven on earth. And it looks as if it succeeded in her mother's generation. She was very successful. She basically knew how to play the system. She was a woman at a time when feminism is coming into its own. I mean, feminism is, at this point, the manifestation of Swedish social engineering. And she's at the crest of the wave, and she rides it very well. She becomes famous as an opera singer. And then, as I said, we come to this point where Greta, I can imagine this, it's not exactly in the book, but I can imagine Greta sitting at home watching Mommy get famous. You can watch the video of her mother singing at the Eurovision contest. And at this point, what we see, I think, is the downside of Swedish feminism, which is basically the children who are at home without Mommy.
Yep.
Mommy's out being famous and the children are at home. So Greta's 6 years old at this point. Everything's sort of going all right, and then something happens. Now, from Mommy's point of view, Greta is in school, and she sees a film on that island of plastic refuse floating in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And at this point, she goes crazy. This is the thesis of the book. Climate change drives Swedes crazy. It makes them crazy. Okay, but then she goes on to say that there are other things happening here. One of them happens to be puberty. This is the age, Greta reaches the age of 11, and she starts to go through puberty, and Mommy's not there. Mommy's really famous now, and Greta is going through something that every girl goes through, and it can be a frightening experience. The body's changing. She doesn't know what's going on. So who do you turn to? Well, you turn to the schools. And Sweden is famous for sex education. Sweden was the sexual paradise. Everybody looked to Sweden in the 1960s as the paradigm of sexual liberation. Now, in the Mommy's generation, there was a Swedish sex education film done in 1969. I forget the name of it, but it featured lots of blah, blah, blah discussion. And then right in the middle, there's a couple having sexual intercourse. Now, it's a film, so it's kind of explicit. But from an 11-year-old point of view, it's kind of adults doing this. I don't think they would identify with the adults. That film got changed at around 2002, right around the time Grace is going to school. And now it's a cartoon. And it's not as explicit as the old sex ed film, but it's more targeted toward adolescents. And so what you have here is a black kid and a white girl in cartoon form going through the sex act. Now, this is more pressure, I think, on somebody like Greta here. Greta and her generation do not like sex ed. They did a survey. The sex education film that she's being pressured to look at is basically teaches the boys to be predators and the girls to be victims. And that's pretty much what happens. And so the backstory here, we all know, well, she said that it was plastic floating in the ocean there, but I got sense it's more puberty and sex education here. And this 11-year-old girl is being subjected to this pressure. Now, the Mommy says, Mrs. Ernemann says, Greta would go into the girls' room and hide there because she was afraid of sexual assault.
Jeez.
The girls in the school, they did a survey of the girls in Swedish schools. The one thing they complained about the sex ed is that it doesn't talk about sexual assault, and they're subjected to sexual assault on a regular basis. So Greta's hiding out in the girls' room, trying to keep away from these boys. Mommy's not there. Mommy should be explaining things. And suddenly she just says, I've had enough. And what she does is she stops eating.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that. What age was he at this point? 11, you said? Was that
11. 11. Yeah. So she reaches puberty. She stops eating. She's given sex ed. She's being assaulted in the school, and she stops eating. Now, this is not craziness. This is completely rational, because what you do when you stop eating is you basically bring your mommy's career to a screeching halt. Because mommy's afraid you're going to die, and you bring mommy back into the kitchen. And I think this is the reaction to Swedish feminism that we're seeing here. And the book, her book, gives lots of statistics saying that Greta was not alone in feeling this way. Mm. So you stop the career, mommy comes back into the kitchen, and now you have imposed this kind of neurotic order on the household that basically the Swedish social engineers abandoned when they embarked upon this million apartment project, the whole social engineering thing.
Yeah.
It's like Greta's on the train and she pulls the emergency brake on the train of Swedish socialism and social engineering and saying, I'm not eating anymore. And if you don't come back here, I'm going to starve to death. And of course, the family goes into a complete crisis.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. Go ahead.
No, at this point, she establishes. Now, the sister is Beata, is in the same situation. Exactly
right.
The same thing happens to Beata. So she reaches puberty, she stops eating. She goes into, and she has these neurotic rituals that she goes through. So what is this kind of neurosis? It's an attempt to impose order on a world that has gone completely out of control. And completely out of control, by that I mean the sexual vulnerability that these girls feel in school under the auspices of the government. These are things that should be protecting them, and they're just handing them over to sexual predators, and they know it. And why is it neurosis? Why would we call it neurosis? Because you can't address it in an open fashion. Why can't you do that? Well, because mommy believes in feminism. You've got a whole class of people here, a whole generation who believe that this is what life is all about. This is social justice. This is the culmination of this great social experiment that we had in Sweden. And nobody knows how to critique it. What are you, crazy? You're against what? You're against rights for women? What are you, crazy? So nobody can critique it. And so what you have then is a neurosis kicking in, which is ultimately an expression of rationality. So Greta says she only eats gnocchi, which are like Italian pierogies, or I don't know what.
Oh, those. Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, I know.
It's like little pieces of pasta with potato inside. Okay, so she eats 5 gnocchi. And they have to be cooked in a certain way, and it takes her 2.5 hours to eat 5 gnocchi.
Jeez.
Now, there is a method to this madness, because it's bringing mommy back into the kitchen. Now, the father, this family did not break up. The father's there all the time. Father is an actor who is not as famous as the mother. And the father basically says, look, you're more famous, you earn more money, I'll take care of the kids. And so he's the house husband, he's been taking care of the kids. Well, that's an intact family. What's wrong with that? Well, I don't know, but Greta did not like it. Neither Greta nor Bianca would accept the fact that dad is cooking food. We got to get mommy back here into the kitchen so that she can cook the gnocchi, and this is the way we're going to solve this problem. Now, this seems to me is perfectly rational in some sense or other, but it's a protest against social engineering. It's a protest against feminism. It's a protest against mommy being outside the home. It's a protest against everything that these people hold as sacred. So what are we going to do? Well, we come to the solution to the problem. We all unite around climate change, because that's safe.
It's the bonding element for the family.
It becomes the bond. This is what holds the family together. And suddenly, I mean, they're not at each other's throats anymore. They finally found a common enemy, and this is what then unites the family and saves the family.
Mm. Interesting. Well, very interesting.
Well, I understand that. I think I understand the dynamics here. I think I understand the social dynamics, but it's really got nothing to do with climate. It has to do with social engineering and feminism. And what happened to Sweden after these forces completely took over? Now, you're there, I'm here. I know what we were subjected to in America when it came to social engineering. There were protest movements. I get the sense that this didn't exist in Sweden, that you had a unified culture, which is an advantage, except for the fact that when someone takes over a unified culture, there's no protest.
Right.
And so everybody is subjected to this. We know that something's wrong, but nobody can articulate it because it goes against what we are. In other words, it comes down to like this question of Swedish identity. Who are we? Who are we? You know, we used to be pagans, and then we were Catholics, and then we were Lutherans, and then we were socialists. Well, who are we? Who are we now? What is our commitment? Is it to the latest social engineering? It seems to be that way. It seems to be that way. They have nothing outside of this environment.
And of course, this is the point, isn't it? Because man is a religious creature. And I've spoken to Mike about this as well. And there is no neutrality. People are always looking for something, whether it's socialism, whether it's, I mean, political correctness. I broke it down on this with Richard on his previous network about political correctness being a religion. And this global warming is a religion. It's filling that void with its particular focus on eschatology. This is it's a death cult. And when you take God out of the equation, then your man is responsible for everything. And some of these people, their handlers obviously are manipulating them, but I think some of these people actually do believe this BS, the likes of Greta Thunberg. And they literally think the planet's going to burn up in 11 years or something ridiculous like that. But yeah, it's a religion. And it's a total death cult. I mean, I wonder how long it'll be before there are people who, you know, there's some sort of suicide by, you know, mass suicide by some of these. Like, I mean, they're spoiled little upper middle class types in England. They stopped the tube last week, people trying to get to work. I mean, an electric tube is not even a threat to the environment or anything to do with global warming. It would fit the bill as in terms of what we should be doing, apparently. It's not, you know, it's not, no one's flying, and they're stopping the tubes. And they enrage some other commuters and travelers trying to get to work, people who actually have got, you know, money worries and got mouths to feed. Because, again, a lot of these upper middle class types are involved in this movement because they have the luxury of sitting around worrying about such abstract issues. And because they don't have to work, they don't have to worry about anything, and they can afford to sit around worrying about this nonsense, which is never going to happen, and essentially be unwitting pawns. I mean, the middle classes in this country, I mean, they get them to university to brainwash them. They are a real problem. I mean, it's the more, in quotes, educated they are, the bigger the problem, because they are the same fools who are saying, immigrants welcome. Oh, and signing on to all the other progressive, degenerate BS that we have shoved down our throats, rammed down our throats by the modern culture. The church largely just goes with the modern culture. It doesn't really, it falls for everything. It stands for nothing. It's like Christianity without Christ, without the backbone. It's a mixture of socialism and the New Age movement and all sorts of BS's in the church. I mean, it's always these middle class types, usually anyway. And even the working classes, when they get them into universities, they come out that way. Literally just swallowed up by the machine and adding muscle to it. I think that's what the zombie movies are about. When these people, you know, these zombie movies are sort of subliminally telling you, you know, what's going on. These people are absolute zombies. They believe all this BS, and they're dangerous. As I say, you've got the conspirators, the globalists. Largely, most of them, this is an international Jewish operation. And then you have the co-conspirators, the fifth columns that we have in our in our in our countries, because they insert themselves into the political institutions, like John Berkowitz, the biased speaker of the House. He, you know, John Berko, but John Berko's a Jew. His grandfather's a Jew anyway. They come from, you know, the Eastern European Jews who flooded into the West at the end of last century, or the end of the 20th century, and the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century. And they've inserted themselves into the political institutions to the point that the fifth column is actually made up of, in many ways, made up of Jews who are, you know, they don't need to be bought off. They're inserted right in there. And of course, we have a fifth column made up of the rest of them who are non-Jews who are in their pockets. And then, as I say, we have, you know, the unwitting pawns who always fall for it, and they get them into the universities to brainwash them, and they come out. And this is another, this movement epitomizes that as well. These spoilt little middle class types go to universities, think that they know better than everybody else, and now they have to try and save us from ourselves for burning up the planet. I did a little skit, funny sort of type video, taking the piss about it, saying, well, you know, how long is it before they tell us to stop breathing? Because we breathe out CO2, you know? Or how long is it before some of these sad fools kill themselves or something? I mean, some of the women, of course, are not having children, even though they acknowledge that we don't really have a population problem to contribute to. I mean, our population is growing because we keep allowing the third world in, so they keep having way more kids than we have. So there is that problem. But largely, the West is not responsible for population, you know, massive population growth. It's places like Africa, China, and India. So go and preach to them.
To step out of this environment that they've all adopted and take some type of critical stance. And so the result is you have to go crazy in order to get your mother's attention. And so what you see here is this proliferation of mental illness in children.
And that's another point. Many of these people are kind of what you guys in America would call daycare kids. We would call them over here nannies. Or they're brought up by their nannies, and their parents don't, you know, it's beneath them to change their diapers, as you call them. We call them nappies over here. And, you know, modern day slaves, Eastern Europeans to do the housework and to bring up the kids, and they're detached from their aloof parents, and that's a big contribution, I think, to their anger. So global warming is a great outlet for these people. It fits them perfectly because they've got privilege, genuine white privilege. These fools have, and they are angry because they're brought up by nannies and they're put into little daycare centers during the day, and they're all upset, so this is a good way for them to express their mental illness and their lack of bonding with their parents.
And it's being encouraged by the system, by the people around it.
Yeah. The system is like the arsonist and the fireman all rolled up in one, okay? They set the building on fire, and then they rush around and put out the fire. This is the therapeutic state that has sort of evolved here, and this is what we're seeing with Greta and her family. It is long chapters of just taking her from one children's psychiatric hospital to another, and the father is desperate. Please tell us what's wrong with our child. At one point, he bursts into tears. Can't you come up with a diagnosis? They're desperate. Because this is the only thing they have. They are incapable of stepping outside of this social environment and looking at it in a rational fashion. That's, I think, the story here.
Now, of course, what has happened is I think also the climate change is a surrogate, obviously, for something. And it's gotten a foothold, of course, in Sweden for a reason, and that's because of the identity has been eroded in many regards. That has been encouraged by the social engineers. They sought to reshape Sweden in a new image. many new phenomena has actually risen up in Sweden even since the 60s. Now, of course, as you say, it's both climate change, but it's also multiculturalism and open borders and helping the rest of the world and these kinds of things. But it's a substitute for a spiritual belief. It's a substitute right. for something that's missing and lacking. And what's interesting, of course, with Greta Thunberg as well, is that they have now kind of shaped her. And that's what we're showing your cover here of your latest Culture Wars magazine. You have a great article about this in there, exposing all these things, all these links. But there is a religious, both tone, but also iconography around Greta Thunberg, which is, subtly been encouraged, if you know what I mean. So talk to us about that and how you see that she's fulfilling a very important role here.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about God. God evaporates from Swedish life. Okay, the Swedish Lutheran Church was disestablished in the year 2000. So God has evaporated. Socialism has filled the vacuum that's taken its place. This means that human beings are responsible for everything, because it has to be. Because who else is there? If it's not human beings, if there's no God, it's got to be human beings. And so suddenly the same human beings who are in charge of everything are faced with something that is changing. Now, there's evidence. I go into this in the article. There are lots of, the chair of meteorology at MIT said CO2 emission has nothing to do with climate change. It couldn't possibly have anything to do with it. These are natural cycles. Well, once you get into natural cycles, you're starting heading toward God. And if God's in charge of the universe, well, then it's in good hands, right? Well, if he's not in charge, then it's in our hands and we've got to do something. And so you have this sense of doom here, you know, because everything depends on us. And what can we do? We really can't do much. You know, and so they fasten desperately on these carbon dioxide emission protocols that were established by the United Nations. And a crucial figure was Olaf Palme here. He was heavily involved in establishing these CO2 protocols. So you're led into this position where we got to do something. We're desperate. We got to do something. But we can't do anything. Because it's we all kind of recognize, so they fixate obsessively on cutting down your CO2 footprint. So now you're not allowed to fly in an airplane. You know, so mommy's career, again, another nail in the coffin.
And of course God is in charge of the weather. Because as he rightly says, if man is responsible for everything, then, well, man's alone, and man can be his own destroyer. And in many ways, he is anyway, but he's right about the weather. I mean, if there isn't a higher power controlling the weather, and if it's not in the hands of an omniscient, omnipotent God, then yeah, you could have these concerns. But, you know, apart from the fact that they alluded to, the science is not there anyway. They keep talking about it as if the science is just as if it's all done. So I'm not saying you have to be, you know, believe in God to not believe this nonsense, because I didn't believe in evolution. And I remember someone at the time was, you know, accusing me of being like an old fashioned archaic Christian. But at that time, I wasn't a Christian. I didn't believe in evolution because I didn't think the science supported it. It's a theory. You know, Darwin himself acknowledges this. This was just picked up on, and it was driven by a lot of these so-called scientific endeavors for control and to distance people from the creator. Philosophically, evolution, for example, it just makes man unimportant, a mere accident, in fact, rather than being what the Bible describes as, you know, being at the center of God's interests. You know, evolution reduces man to a mere accident. That somehow we came out of all this slush somewhere along the line, and of course they can never tell you where we actually started from. I mean, it had to start somewhere. Anyway, the point is, you know, you don't even have to be a believer in God to acknowledge this stuff is just, it's frantic lies, basically. And these people are, they're crazy. And as he points out about Greta Thunberg, she's, you know, her mother herself documents that she, the girl's unwell. But, you know, if you do have God in your life, then, you know, as well, you don't worry about these types of things. I mean, I actually like to take care of the environment. I don't like living in, you know, filthy sort of polluted areas and stuff like that. But I mean, you can go to parts of India and it's absolutely horrendously filthy. I mean, they just, the parts of India are just absolutely disgusting. So why don't they go out and preach to the Indians?
Of mommy's career, so she can't fly around forever. And then you get these ridiculous gestures, these theatrical gestures, like Greta sailing to New York from Sweden.
Yeah, what they don't tell you is that her crew of about, I think was it perhaps you'd half a dozen crew, they all flew back home again across the Atlantic.
You're the one who said it was the Rothschilds' yacht.
Yeah, that's right. They of course let me pull this one up here. They it was owned by the Rothschilds, Baron Edmund, I think, or it was one of them, owned by the Rothschilds, was sold later to two other German millionaires, multimillionaires, and they renamed it to Malizia II, which almost said meant malice, which was another kind of symbolic thing. But yes, it was Rothschild owned, and of course, as you as well exposed in the article, Michael, it was actually more CO2 costly to make this whole spectacle for them than it would have been if they just took a plane to America to begin with for her famous UN speech.
Yeah. So anyway, it turns out that they have to fly the crew back across the Atlantic. So we're back to airplanes again. We're back to burning fossil fuels. We're back to the whole CO2 thing. So it's all a meaningless type of gesture here. But the general attitude behind this thing is doom. It's doom. We've got 12 years. Do you realize how short a time that is? I mean, look at my watch. How much time have we wasted here talking about this when we should have been out doing something about climate change? And we only have now 11 years and some, you know, left. I mean, this is doom. This is complete hopelessness. And you can see this just kind of weighing on this poor little child who sees this as her only salvation. You know, so I think, you know, we're in a moment now where over here, Greta Thunberg is completely forgotten. I mean, we've moved on to the new news cycle here. The problem here is that you when you do this, you never, if you stick with the news cycle, you never have a chance to analyze.
Your life here on revisionmedia.org, I should say, do donate. If you go to the website, revisionmedia.org, there is a donate option there. We're 100% listener supported, so do support us. If you like the work I do, you can do that on PayPal at stevenson_p5@sky.com. You're live with me, Paul Stevenson, here on revisionmedia.org, and I'm playing an interview from E. Michael Jones. So I tried to get Mike on the show, and he was unable to do it tonight. And I have to just keep in touch with him. We'll try and figure out another date, because he's incredibly busy these days. On social media and on YouTube and doing interviews and stuff. But when I first interviewed him, he wasn't as busy, but his popularity has grown immensely in recent months. So I heard this interview and I thought it was a good interview, so I thought I would introduce you to Mike Jones, and hopefully we'll get him on the show. For any of you who are not familiar with him, E. Michael Jones, and this is an interview he did on Red Ice Radio.
Anything, and so if you don't analyze anything, you're never going to understand anything.
Yeah.
But I think what happened here is that we need a new 16-year-old. She didn't. I think they played that too many times. You know what? She looks mentally disturbed. She does. And
yeah,
she's not going
a little bit off. She looks younger than she actually is as well, which is kind of part of this idea that they can sell it as if this is a child. I mean, how dare you to speak up against this child? They see it as a personal attack on her if you criticize the proposals that she's coming with.
Yeah, I don't know whether you saw the Fox News clip about
this. I did. I included it. You mean when they're talking about her being mentally challenged?
One guy mentions something that it's obvious from the way she talks, but her mother kind of talks about it in the book.
Yeah.
Not only is she mentally disturbed, but this is a gift. This is why we should listen to her. You know, so the mother brags about it, and then this other thug—I don't—I forget his name now—but he's on. There's the guy. You know, he's
Michael Knowles there.
And the other thug comes on and starts insulting him. What do you mean, skinny boy? You know, apologize. Who do you think you are? And of course, this thuggish behavior gets rewarded by Fox News because they banned Knowles from ever coming
back
again.
And they issued an apology to the family and to Greta Thunberg as well when it's admitted that she has these mental problems, right? He didn't say anything that was offensive or whatever. It's reality.
No, it's not admitting something. They're bragging about it.
Right.
The fact that Greta is mentally disturbed means she can see carbon dioxide.
That's right.
This is her mother.
That's right.
Talking about she can see that carbon dioxide coming up out of the... She's a visionary. She's a saint.
She has psychic powers,
And she's got psychic powers because she's mentally ill. So at this point, you're starting to see the whole gestalt, the bigger picture here, which is now Michel Foucault. Michel Foucault enters the picture at this point because he's the guy who talked about insane asylums as the repository of all of these visionaries who really had an alternative view of reality. There's no such thing as mental illness. And where did he get these ideas? Well, he went to Sweden. It's coming back again to Sweden. Foucault ends up spending, I think, 3 years in Uppsala at the university teaching French and getting annoyed at the Swedes because they're too tolerant.
Interesting. That is very interesting.
It is. It's exactly because this is it. Now you're getting to the heart of Foucault as well. Foucault was a Catholic, raised as a Catholic in France, who struggled with homosexuality during his adolescent years, attempted suicide a number of times, and ended up wanting to be punished. He wanted to be punished for his homosexuality because he knew in a perverse way that it was wrong. And so he got his wish when he ended up in San Francisco, and he ended up in the bathhouses of San Francisco, where he engaged in sadomasochism, which is a form of punishment, basically, for what he knew was wrong. Now, Sweden is the antithesis of this. That's why he didn't like Sweden, because they didn't punish him because he was a pervert. So what you're seeing here is this kind of picture that's emerging here. Because Foucault has become the kind of house philosopher of social engineering now at this stage of the game, anyone who is different has privilege. And if you are mentally ill, you have special privileges. You're a visionary, as I said before, and everyone is supposed to listen to you because you're marginalized in a number of different ways here. Because you're mentally ill, because you're a girl, because you're a female, because of all of these things taken together.
Yeah, minority status, what have you, anything that works to push the majority culture to the side. And they always use these kinds of, whether it's a group or an individual or whatever it is, it's always used as a sledgehammer against established traditional culture. It's not just that they can be there and do their thing. It's predicated on the fact that whatever is established needs to be destroyed and broken down, right?
Yes, and so this was Foucault's implementation of Nietzsche. He loved Nietzsche, and Nietzsche's program was the Transvertung aller Werte. And that's what we're seeing in our day. And now you see climate change can be integrated into that assault on cultures throughout the world. That's what we're seeing here.
Interesting. Why don't we also, one thing I do want to talk about here in this portion we're doing in this segment with you, Michael, is the connections as well, and again, reestablish the fact that it's not her rise to fame was not organic. You exposed that in the article that you wrote as well. We know about the early meetings between, of course, Ingmar Rentzog, the mother, Malena Enman. They were on a stage together. This guy, who's from a marketing background, really, he just happened to walk on the same path where Greta Thunberg was sitting the first day she was doing her hunger strike for the climate, August 20th or whatever it was, 2018, I think it was. And he's just happened to walk by. He has his cell phone ready, takes a snapshot, puts it on his profile pages. And again, he's behind, I forgot to mention that he's behind a group called We Don't Have Time.
We don't have time.
All of these groups, by the way, are, I don't know if you got to the part in the video what I did where I talked about how they're all time obsessed. Every single organization that's popping up in relation to climate change has this urgency issue. It says, no, don't think. We can't be rational about this. We have to act now. There's no more time. We're running out. Just hand over power, hand over your money, hand over everything. Otherwise, you will die. It's this pressure campaign. And again, it's advertisement-based. These are subversive techniques used right. by marketing people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the time thing is a function of atheism. There's time is running out. I think that atheism leads to a sense of doom. And I think that this is a manifestation of it. And so time is running out. And so this means mandates desperate measures. The problem is that desperate measures are starting to backfire. I don't know whether you saw the videos of the Extinction Rebellion demonstrations in London.
I did. Yeah, we talked about it.
But anyway, there's one of them is these guys climb on top of the subway. The underground. We have different words for it here. Okay, so this is mass transportation, which is a good idea, right? In terms of climate, in terms of ecology, that's a good idea. These trains run on electricity, that's a good idea. This is all better than individual combustion engines clogging the streets and everything else. So what's the protest about? What are you protesting? Are you saying that people should not be able to move from one part of London to another?
Shut up.
Yeah, this happened last week, the underground tube in London. A couple of these spoiled little brats got up on top of the tube and stopped people from getting to work. And there was a backlash to it immediately because there's a bunch of guys there who obviously who live in the real world who are trying to get to work and have got mouths to feed and rent to pay. Went up on the tube and rightly so grabbed them and brought them down and just mugged them basically. And it was a PR disaster for this crowd because that's all they do. They just wreck people's days. They brought London to a standstill for two weeks. And they get paid for it. This is typical Jewish provocateur stuff. It's indicative. It epitomizes the exact same sort of behavior when you look at a communist revolution. It just destroys everything and riots. The same thing happened in Hong Kong. These things are never organic, and Extinction Rebellion themselves are on record for saying that they are, at the very least, paying the expenses of a lot of these people, you know, to come and protest. Meanwhile, you know, literally, you know, stopping other people from earning any money. I mean, it's a total joke. It's total hypocrisy, and it's total insanity.
Civilization, that's what it's about.
So they climb on top of the train, and what they do is provoke a reaction. So there's a mob down there. These people need to get home. They've been working all day, and there's some lunatic on top of the train. So they put up a ladder, and they drag the guy down, and they beat him up.
Yeah.
This is a sign here, I think, that it's starting to backfire.
And you see these images here, too? It's death. They have coffins and hourglass as their symbol, their logo. Time is running out. There's a Saturn connection even in that with the hourglass, Cronus, the time measure.
Yeah, so because they don't want anyone to think about it. They just want to scare the crap out of everyone. Don't do any thinking. We've done all the thinking for you. We need to act now. We've got 11 years, and then we're all going to perish. I mean, it literally is, you know, doomsday eschatology stuff. It's insanity.
Etc. It's all very symbolic, you know.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's an atheistic religion, a doom religion, a death cult. That's what we're seeing here. That's what
it's exactly what it is—a death cult.
This has led to, and at a certain point, you have to look for psychological explanations here. I think that's what I had to do with Greta, and thankfully her mother provided the background and the data that allows you to come up with these psychological explanations.
Yeah, explaining why she is the way she is, and then that she was somehow I kind of exposed that in the video too. It wasn't that she was selected for that very specific reason, but it turned out very good for them that this is what she had. These things. It was a contest. I don't know if you recall that there was a contest that was made. These were winners from an open ad in one of the bigger Swedish newspapers regarding to climate, I believe. There was a number of kids that were writing contributions for that. I believe got second place for that, and one of these guys, I forget, that's right. He major player in the climate field in Sweden and stuff like that. You know, he's trying to make one of our bigger, we call them landskap, which is kind of like a state in America, but one of them needs to go gas-free. The whole state needs to go gas-free kind of thing. He reached out to all these winners of this op-ed prize in the newspaper, and yeah, that was the only one that actually replied. And he had monitored the school shooting that took place in Florida with all these kids, like David Hogg and the kind of the way that they were marketed, kind of in a similar way to try to disarm America. He'd been watching that and wanted to mimic something similar in Sweden related to climate. So, you know, it's very interesting, the parallels there.
Yeah, it's very clever. And the guy who discovered her also apparently went to one of Al Gore's schools. Or seminar.
Yeah, so he was educated by Al Gore.
Yeah, Al Gore. So there's that connection. And it also opens up a whole new way of basically intimidating people by saying that the world is coming to an end. So it's like a millennialist cult or something like that. And that you have to do what we say or else what? Or else we're all going to die.
Yeah, there's no time for you people to be doing any thinking. Act now. If you don't, you're going to die. I did a little spoof video about it. It's just like, these are the same types of people that are talking about, you know, we should stay in the EU, because if we leave the EU, the same type of posh morons who've got little else to worry about, telling us that we're going to ruin the future of our next generation and the generation after that. This is just going to be, you know, absolute the same sort of thing going off the cliff if we leave the EU. Well, you can't have it both ways. If the world's going to end in 11 years, what the hell are you worried about? Why are you worried about Brexit and the next generation?
That's right. Yep. You better hand over your power, your money, everything. Let us be in charge as the global elite.
Yeah. So it's, again, we see proxy warriors for the oligarchs. This time it's little girls. Yep. It reminded me of the child soldiers in Africa a little bit. You know?
Yeah. It's equally sinister. It's equally despicable to see that there's people that push kids in front of them to say, you take the hits, you take the blame. I mean, look at the, Greta Thunberg, she has been vehemently attacked, but criticized. And there's a lot of heat around her too, because she is kind of a representative for this message. And not everyone does agree, by the way. There's a lot of dissenting views, thankfully. The whole climate ordeal and debacle, Al Gore 10 years ago, rising sea levels, we're all going to die. He had to go underground after that, after the climate gate. Remember that, 2010, CRU?
That's right. That's a really important chapter in this whole story.
Yeah.
The University of East Anglia, the emails became public in 2009 about them fudging the data. We're going to have to correct the data to suit the conclusion we want to come to. This obliterated the credibility of what they were doing.
That's
and
right.
Yet it just got dropped. It all went down the memory hole.
It did. Yeah, go ahead.
One sign that it didn't was that Prince Charles, shortly thereafter, gave a really impassioned speech, looking us in the eyes and saying, well, let's not quibble about details, right? We all know it's true. Well, no, we don't all know it's true.
At 1.5 degrees, 1.5 degrees, Michael, that is a detail in the scheme of things. If you look back in the record of ups and downs in the climate and these cyclicals, we can look at the solar cycles, about 11 years, that's one factor, depending on activity on the sun, that contributes to radically, it contributes to different temperatures and cycles on the earth and whatnot. But you have it in the article right here. It says, it was the IPCC's predictions about carbon dioxide which played a crucial role in converting Greta's mother to the climate change cause. And the IPCC, they based the majority of where they got their data from was from CRU, the Climate Research Unit at East Anglia University. If they fuck them numbers, if they put these boxes where they measure the temperature at parking lots next to man-made buildings where you have an artificial increase of temperature because of accumulation and stuff like that, all of this was exposed back in 2010. All of it.
Yeah. And then it went all memory old. And now it's come back. So the good news is that her arrival got us to look back and find out what was really going on. So,
That's good.
Anyway, I'm going to wrap it up there. That was E. Michael Jones. As I say, I hope to get Mike on the show. I've done quite a lot of interviews with Mike over the years on Revolution Radio. And I will try and get him on here. He wasn't able to come on tonight soon. Here on revisionmedia.org. And do support the network. We're 100% listener supported. And I will be back next Thursday. That's Halloween, isn't it? 31st, next Thursday. 10 p.m. till 11 p.m. here in the UK where I am, which is 5 p.m. till 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And again, that was E. Michael Jones, and I will try and get him on the show. He was busy, but he was with Red Ice Radio there. So if you're not familiar with Mike, you can check out his videos. He did take a lot of his videos down, preempting that they were going to delete a lot of his videos. So his YouTube channel, last time I looked at it, he'd taken everything off that, but he's on BitChute now and other platforms, and of course it's Culture Wars magazine, which I get a copy of online, so just the e-version of it. Okay, I will hand you over now to Big, what's this? I'm trying to think of Graham's name. Is it Big Viking, I think? Is it something like that? Anyway, I will be back next Thursday, the 31st, same time, 10 to 11 p.m., 5 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Until then, take care.